It's time for the Douglas Coleman Show. Mr. Smooth and Savvy is joined by guests from all walks of life, from the entertainment industry to authors to political and social commentators, the famous and not so famous, the controversial and the light and fluffy. We have it all. Now, here's Douglas Coleman.
Well, hello there. Heidi, heidi, ho there. Welcome to the Douglas Coleman Show. It's me, as always, Douglas Coleman. How are you? We got Diane Franklin here today. If you're my age, or a little bit younger, or a little bit older, you will undoubtedly know and remember Diane for some of the great films she did in the 80s, such as Better Off Dead, The Last American Virgin, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, Amityville 2, The Possession. She will be with us, and we will reminisce about those times when we were all younger, when life was a bit different, as people didn't have a phone stuck to them 24/7. How we ever managed to live without our phone is beyond all comprehension. Anyway, she will be here, and it's a nice conversation, so stick around. We will be right back with Diane Franklin.
You're listening to Mr. Smooth and Savvy right here on the Douglas Coleman Show. We'll be right back after these commercial messages.
Hi there, this is Stuart Epps, record producer. This is my story about Elton John, working with him in those early years, going back to 1967 at Dick James, all the amazing tours, those first recordings, going through to Rocket Records. And it's an amazing story about his incredible rise to stardom and my part in that. So look forward to taking you on that journey. So here we go.
Yeah, and to order this great audio CD, please just email me at stuartepps@talk21.com. That's Stuart, S-T-U-A-R-T, Epps, E-P-P-S, at talk, T-A-L-K, 21 in figures, .com. stuartepps@talk21.com. Email me and I'll give you all the details for buying this brilliant audio disc. Thank you, bye.
DJC Music and DJC Productions are pleased to announce a brand new website. We have started a listing website for radio show hosts as well as potential show guests. This is a meeting site where hosts and guests can come together. Show hosts can list their show and types of guests they're interested in booking. Potential guests can list their talents, bio, accomplishments, or anything they feel makes them an interesting radio show guest. There are no recurrent payments, only a one-time $5 listing fee. Your listing will stay up until you decide to cancel. Previous guests of the Douglas Coleman Show are welcome to submit their guest listing free of charge. Go to radiohostsandguests.com. That's radiohostsandguests.com.
Tired of living in a culture of lies, fake news, and alternative facts? The Pro-Truth Pledge reverses the tide of lies by calling on politicians, and everyone else, to commit to truth-oriented behaviors. The pledge asks signees to commit to 12 behaviors that research in behavioral science shows lead to truthfulness, such as clarifying one's opinions and the facts, citing one's sources, and celebrating people who update their beliefs toward the truth. Private citizens who sign the pledge get the benefit of contributing to a more truth-oriented society. Public figures get more substantive rewards for signing the pledge in the form of positive media and public recognition. The pledge crowdsources the truth by asking volunteers to evaluate the statements of public figures who sign the pledge. Take the pledge, demand that your elected representatives do so, and encourage your friends to take it at protruthpledge.org.
Are you an independent musician? How would you like to have your songs played on hundreds of radio stations just like the one you're listening to right now? Join MusicSubmit.com and we'll promote your music to radio stations and blogs in your genre. It's free to set up your account, and we guarantee your music will be considered for airplay by radio stations worldwide. Why not sign up today? It's free. MusicSubmit.com, radio promotion for indie musicians.
Hi, this is John Morgan, production supervisor for DJC Productions. You're listening to The Douglas Coleman Show.
Okay, please welcome to The Douglas Coleman Show, Diane Franklin. Hi, Diane, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you for asking. And how are you?
Oh, doing very well, thank you very much.
Good to hear.
I'm happy to have you on the show because I took a look at your bio, and you and I are like exactly the same age, 3 months apart. And I won't Ooh. I won't say which way, but I watched all your films. I've seen all of them that you've been in. Those were the films when I was in college, and you know, so I remembered you very well when I saw your name come through. I said, "Yes, I'd love to have her on the show."
Well, I appreciate it because it's not something that's a given. You know, you can be working in the entertainment business your whole life, and there's always new people, and you know, there's somebody else to discover. And so I always appreciate it when people remember me.
Oh, absolutely. And I did see your thing on Twitter. I followed you on Twitter, and I thought your tweet to Eddie Van Halen was very nice. That was so sad.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, there's so much going on in the world right now. It's kind of tragic that it's hard to even stop. And, you know, when someone who's, you know, been such a, I don't know, just a wonderful, lovable, positive influence on the world, and just to, like, let that go by so quickly, I just, you know, every person who's in entertainment has affected our country, you know, or the world in general, you know, as an entertainer. And, you know, I just think that it was, it just hit me. And I was glad to hear that a lot of people, it, you know, it affected people as well. We had to stop and take a moment and say, oh my gosh, this incredible, wonderful energy of a person is, you know, no longer with us. It's so sad.
Yeah, it's very sad. Plus, again, going back to our respective ages, Van Halen was an iconic band back in the 80s. And you know, they were it. I mean, they really were it.
Well, you know, that film, by the way, Better Off Dead was a film that I did. His music was in that film, Everybody Wants Some, you know, his guitar playing.
And right.
So I just remember, you know, having that be a part of my, you know, actual film experience, you know, to listen to his music in the film was just so much fun.
You know, it's funny that you're on the show now because I just watched Better Off Dead. I don't know, maybe a week ago. I was just looking for something. You know, we're all kind of not trying to go outside too much because of the COVID thing. And so I was just sort of looking at old films and thinking, oh, yeah, I remember that one. So I just watched it. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, it was funny.
And then,
you know, that's...
Nipsey Buckets.
Yeah. Oh, God. That woman was unbelievable. The best part for me was when she squeezed your face and said, Christmas. I love that.
Yeah, Reggie's mother. She would talk like that, right? She was great.
What
we had a blast working together. She made me laugh.
I'll bet. How was John Cusack to work with in that?
When we did Better Off Dead, John was awesome. I mean, we had a blast. We had such a good time. It was early in his career, and he hadn't done more his serious films yet. So I feel really fortunate that I worked with him during that time. John was so sweet. It was very easy to work with him. He's very natural, and I think he grounds the film in Better Off Dead. He really grounds it and makes it like, you know, you watch him and you feel like he's like the everyman, and you can, you know, he just makes you feel for him, you know, and as far as my character, you know, I play the French girl. For those of you who don't know, Better Off Dead is a comedy, not a horror film. And I play a French exchange student, and I took this in the film. So don't get confused. we had a lovely, I think it's just a lovely little romantic comedy, kind of. That's what it's, a romantic comedy, really. But it's hilarious.
It was very funny. And actually, you're right. His character and yours were probably the same people in that group because everyone else was just whacked. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cartoony-esque, you know, like over the top in a way. Actually, it's funny you mentioned this because I'm actually writing a book about Better Off Dead right now. And hopefully we'll have that out. I want to have it out next year. I thought I'd be having it this year, but I don't think it's going to make it because I want it to be, it's really from my heart. And I got some great information, never before heard, interviews, and I've got great photos, and I would go to conventions, and I brought my, I actually have the coat, the original coat I wore in the film, and I would let fans wear it, and so fans are actually going to be in, wearing the coat in my book, so it's going to be really special, so people should definitely connect with me, you know, stay connected with my social media to find out when it's coming out, when it does, because it will be a collector's item of those who love the film.
That wasn't, who directed that? That wasn't John Hughes, was it?
No, but it's funny you say that because I actually auditioned for some John Hughes films, so I almost went into that world. But it was directed by Savage Steve Holland.
Okay, I don't know that name.
Savage did a lot of, he actually did How I Got Into College afterwards, and he also wound up working a lot for Nickelodeon. You're not going to believe this, I don't know if you know this, but Ricky, in the film tortures me, he actually became one of the biggest producers at Nickelodeon. And later on, after Better Off Dead was done, he wound up becoming what's called Schneider's Bakery, and he hired Savage Steve Holland to work on his on
wow.
his shows. So it's bizarre that, like, Savage started the feeling of all that craziness, and that actually influenced Nickelodeon's entertainment. So it's kind of fascinating to see the... That's when Better Off Dead came out, that was the beginning of sort of a teen entertainment style that was then affected, like Zoe 101 or Drake and Josh, Amanda Show. All those shows came from Schneider's Bakery, which was Danny, which was Daniel Schneider, which is insane. It's just crazy how the small world.
It really is. Okay, well, I know we're kind of going backwards, but you were also in The Last American Virgin. And you were also in Amityville 2. The Last American Virgin, your co-star was, what was his name?
Lawrence Monison.
Okay.
Lawrence Monison.
Does he get confused for Ray Romano a lot? Because I swear he looks just like Ray Romano.
You know, that's funny. I don't know. Because, I mean, I have never heard him say that. But you know what? That is funny. He kind of does look a little bit like Ray. I mean, you know, grown-up Ray, I guess. I don't know. Today he doesn't. But at that time, I think maybe a little.
Well, he was, how old was he in that film? I mean, he was probably 20-ish,
oh,
right? Or younger.
He was 17 when he did that
was
film.
Was he really? Oh,
and that's the interesting part, because we all thought he was 18, but he was, he really wanted to do it, and he was 17 years old. I mean, I don't know if he turned 18 during the time. I'm trying to think, but he definitely was 17 when he got the part, when he did it. So, he was the youngest. And, and we had a great time. That film I have very fond memories of, because it was the first film that we all worked together. We were like newbies to making films. And even though Steve Anton had done a film with Jodie Foster before, he was sort of like the guy who played Rick, was sort of like he took care of us all, Kimmy, and like, he just sort of like, I mean, it was very kind of funny, because obviously the relationship in the film was so, like, you know, competitive between the guys, but Steve was very nice to all of us and kind of said, oh, it's going to be okay, and you guys just do your thing, and he was really cool, and as well as Kimmy, you know, Kimmy Robertson, who played Rose, who was on Twin Peaks later. We're still friends to this day. You know, we're all friends to this day. It was a really nice bonding we had. That usually happens on first films. You have that bonding.
So working backwards again, how did you get started in acting?
Oh! Back in my day. Here's what happened. You know, actually, I wrote a couple of books, and my first book talks in more detail about it, because obviously we don't have time. But I started, if you look up Diane Franklin book on the internet, you'll see my books. How I started actually was, I wanted to do acting. I wanted to be an actress since I was four, literally 4 years old. And my parents had no connections, and there was no, you know, there was nothing. It was just my, I guess it was my drive and my commitment. You know, I really, from the very early age, knew what I wanted to do. And I was taking singing and dancing and not really acting lessons at the beginning, because there really weren't any. I'm from back east, but it wasn't like people didn't encourage young people to take acting classes at the time. They just wanted them to be kids and, you know, sort of fill a part in something. But I learned from doing, and I started with, like, at the age of 10, I started with modeling, and then I did commercials and voiceovers and a soap opera and theater, and I just worked my way up. And I also did school plays, you know, so I participated. I went to a public school. So I just always went, like, my interest didn't wane, you know. I always was focused on wanting to do it, and it wasn't about the fame. It was about the love of performing and playing characters, you know, and the creativity. It's fascinating. Like, I've always, and to this day, I mean, I'm working even now, and it's really driven by, you know, interesting characters.
You said you grew up back east?
Mm-hmm. I grew up in Long Island.
Oh.
Where I, you know, everyone's talking like this. And I remember it was not so much, but I remember when I was maybe 12 and I, you know, I started doing acting, and my manager said, you know, you can't talk like this. You know, you have to get more mid-range regional, not so much with this voice, you know. So, and I didn't even hear it, because when you grow up, like, you don't hear your own voice necessarily,
no.
Or you're surrounded by everybody. Everybody sounds the same. So you don't know, you have a dialect. So what they told me, it was funny, was that I should watch the news, and the news is where the voice was the most neutral. And so I started practicing at that age, you know, trying not, I would say, where, you know, they'd say today on the news, and I'd go, instead of today on the news, and I would be like, oh, that's, you know, I don't move my mouth, that's extreme, or, you know, so, so I self-taught, you know, and I think that's another thing, you know, with the internet now, you know, if people want to perform and do acting, there's so much information on the internet I wish I had had. But at that time, you know, it was sort of like word of mouth, and you just practice what you could.
It was a different world when we grew up, absolutely, without all of this stuff.
So different,
yeah.
Yes.
Amazing. So when did you move to L.A.? Because you would have had to have gone to L.A. at some point.
Yes, when I did Last American Virgin, that was the first time I was in L.A., and I was 19. So I was 19 years old when I did that film. And then, then I went back. I was going to NYU, and I went back to NYU, and I tried to continue college because I went to college. And then I got Amityville, and that was back east. And then finally, I moved to LA when I was 21, because the reason why I didn't move sooner was because I couldn't rent a car and I couldn't get around. Every time I came to LA, they had to drive, you know, the studios would have to drive me around. So I didn't want to come and move to LA until I could drive. I was 21.
You couldn't rent a car because you didn't have a driving license, or you weren't old enough?
No, I had a driver's license, but to rent something, you have to be over, at that time, I think you had to be over 25 or something.
Oh.
So, okay. Yeah, so I didn't want to, I wasn't ready to buy something because I didn't know if it was going to work in LA, you know? So it's kind of interesting, you know, at the time I wasn't going to move there until I could be a full adult. And I was moving by myself, obviously. My parents were, you know, still in Long Island. So, you know, I was moving on my own, you know. And I think that's at that time, you know, without the internet, without, like, being able to have a cell phone, it was a little more daring, I think, than what you could do today to a certain extent. I don't know. How do you think? What do you think?
You mean to move away from your family?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think if you move after, you know, 21 is kind of like good, but if you do it before, it's a little scary, especially without cell phones.
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, you had your choice of a long distance phone call or writing a letter. Yeah. Remember that? You know?
Yes.
And now you can just connect up. You can see each other just anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot different.
Yeah.
It's a lot different for the kids now. I mean, your kids could be halfway around the world and they still, it's like they're right there as long as they get a phone.
Mm-hmm. You're like, are you okay? And you can see them, and you can see that they're okay.
Yep. And you can text them anytime. And oh, yeah, it's a way different world. You moved across the country in those days. You were gone. You were absolutely gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's true. So let me go back to Last American Virgin, because that was a pretty big film, as I remember, in 82. And you made it seem so easy, like, oh, I got that part. Was it that easy? I mean, did you have to work to get that one?
Oh my gosh. No. Okay. So for, you know, my career was like, you know, I worked 10 years before or 9 years before I did Last American Virgin. Meaning I went for auditions and I wasn't booking anything. Before Virgin, I would go for an audition. I wasn't cast as like the best friend. I wouldn't get like auditions for that. And for leads, I didn't have a name. And also I didn't have the look. I had to straighten my hair and like try to look like a 70s girl. It was a whole different ballgame. And it was just an interesting time for me. I wouldn't give up, but I wasn't getting that break. And then with Last American Virgin, so many things happened. I was cast as the lead in this film with being like a dream girl. And I had this dark curly hair and they cast me, I think, right off the bat from my look, because that was something that was different. It was the beginning of the 80s and they were European filmmakers. So my feeling is that they saw curly hair as being beautiful. And that was not the case with American fashion. America looked at curly hair as being frizzy or bushy, or it was like the best friend had the curly hair, or they were silly, or, right. You know, it just was cast in a way that wasn't beautiful. So I was shocked when I got that part. And I didn't know this, but the director, Boaz Davidson, he had looked at hundreds of girls before he saw me. And so it was kind of amazing for me that I was the one who was eventually cast. But it just goes to show that, you know, they need a new face or they need somebody, you know, with a new look, that, you know, there's always that kind of like magical feeling of like, you know, you're the one, like you get, you know, it's like a Hollywood dream. So I was shocked when I got it, but I was really excited and it went very, very quickly. We worked, they cast me. I actually was flown to LA. I screen tested with Rick with Steve Anton, and Lawrence Monison played Gary, and Kimmy, I think, was there as well. And we all got cast the day while we were there, like we auditioned with a couple of different people, got the part. And then like an hour later, they're like, okay, we're going to do wardrobe. Let's go.
Wow.
And I was, oh my gosh. And we started shooting the following week. So it went really quickly. And especially, I mean, luckily I had been in the business for 9 years before. So I could handle it. Like I was on my own. I was 19 by myself in Los Angeles, but I, you know, everything was union and SAG. And so I had been in the business long enough to know that it was safe and that it was, there was a procedure and a way to do things. So, but I look back now and I think, oh, if my daughter was doing that, like, oh my gosh, like I would have been so nervous for her. I was like, you take care of yourself. You know, how looking back, you know, how things changed. But I had been in the business for so long by that time that I was capable and I was confident and I was able to, you know, just enjoy the experience.
Well, it's funny you mentioned about the hair, because you do have great hair and I assume your curls are natural, right?
Oh, yes. I would. Okay. Thank you very much. And no, I would never do this to myself. As far as perming, when people started perming, I'm like, oh, am I really seeing this? That was really my feeling. Wow.
But at that time, it seems like every kind of teen movie that came out, all the girls had the Farrah Fawcett hair. That was the look, right?
Yes. Thank you for saying that. Exactly. Everybody wanted that Farrah Fawcett hair, which was fun to do. And I think it's great. Like when a hairstyle comes in fashion, everybody wants to try it and see if their hair can do it. But yes, no, everybody did the Farrah Fawcett. I even have headshots when I was 14 or 15 with the flip. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
it
you know, even half the guys had hair like that. I mean, you look at like the teen idols, like Sean Cassidy and David. I mean, they all had it.
I didn't even think of that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And then when my hair came out, I was the first actress to bring the curly hair look into the 80s. So after me there was, you know, Flashdance and
right.
Dirty Dancing,
right.
And like even like Brooke Shields and, you know, Julia Roberts, they brought their curly hair out. Sarah Jessica Parker also, she has very curly hair, but she would straighten it, or she played on Square Pegs the girl who was the best friend, right? So all of a sudden it became beautiful. And then everybody got perms. And I was like, that is so ironic. You know, it just was like, I literally, I mean, I wrote about this in press kits at the time, saying this is crazy, this is happening, because this is, it was not the American look. And then it became synonymous with an American look in the 80s. That's what was so crazy.
Well, you're right. I mean, Jennifer Grey had the same hair in Ferris Bueller, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, what's her name? From Weird Science. Kelly LeBrock.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And she was supposed to be gorgeous. I mean, she was the, you know, the robot, or I guess, right?
Right,
or
she was the robot. Right, right.
And she was supposed to be the, you know, object of beauty, right?
Yep.
So again, so different from the 70s, like that look, that curly hair. And to me, when I, my hair is like, got a sort of a, it's a sultry kind of ethnic look, which maybe in another time in life wouldn't have been like, you know, the look. But I think what was interesting about it is, like, it brought even in Flashdance, that ethnic look brought the Jennifer Beals, who had more of an ethnic look herself, into a lead role. And
right.
that's a big deal. The 80s were a time where women were more emancipated in their, you know, they were coming into the workforce, they were trying to get paid equally, and they were also you know, they were standing up for themselves. They were trying to make their own money. And it was a really strong time for women. And you know, they were sexuality. They were showing their sexuality much more than I think the 80s. The 70s were a little bit more pulled back. But the 80s was a very kind of sexual and fun and high energy time to me.
I agree. At that time, it was just before the big AIDS crisis, which kind of put a damper on the sexuality
mm-hmm.
part. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It was fun while it lasted.
Yeah, right? Well, that's what we're all looking back and like, wait a minute, that didn't last forever. I mean, I don't know about you, but I remember thinking, well, it's just, you know, we're just going to keep moving forward in a way where, you know, everybody, you know, we're all equal and, you know, all this stuff. But it's fascinating now, you know, I would just say, like, a lot of people our age are looking back at the 80s and going, that was a moment in time, you know, and I'm glad I enjoyed it when I did.
Absolutely true. One last question about movies, and then we'll talk about your current projects here. You've done almost as many sort of horror films as you've done comedy films. Do you have a preference?
You know, I've always been attracted to the roles. And what happened was, whenever I've had an audition for a film, I've gone for some very big films, some good films. I was actually screen tested for Amadeus, and
wow.
It was between me and the Elizabeth Berridge for the main role, and like an A-list film. And my feeling is, if the role is good, I'm interested. So. In horror, I have to say, what's interesting about it is really, people call it horror, and yeah, there's, you know, there's different levels of horror. You know, as we can see now from the internet, there's, you know, very, you know, there's kind of thrillers, and then there's ghost stories, and then there's, you know, really graphic, you know, bloody, zombie-esque kind of films, and it's very boutique. Like, you can go, you know, you could pick your own genre within the genre, but for me, it's where the drama is. That's what I really like about horror. And so as an actress, like, I could play such dramatic parts in horror. That's, to me, where it's not as dry, say, as a cop show, which is like, or a show, a mystery show, like who's who and who did it. That's very story focused. Like, to me, when I watch something that's like a CSI or a, you know, a show like where, you know, you're trying to figure out the mystery, there, that is more like a who's who, and the story is the main point. But in horror, I feel like the acting is really the main focus. It's, you know, you just watch it and you just get engrossed in the characters. So that's my feeling about horror. And comedy, I love comedy. I have a sense of humor, so I can laugh at myself and I can poke fun at myself, but I also can, I get it. So I enjoy doing comedy, and who wouldn't want to laugh on set? You know, that's like the really fun thing. So But I've never, you know, I do think, I'm curious, like, when you think of me, do you think of me as a comedic actress or a dramatic actress? Or, I don't know, just an actor, like, I always, because I did so many different things, that's the thing I always wondered, you know, what people would remember me as. But now I think maybe it's just the movie that they liked, and that's how they remember me. So, you tell me.
Well, I think you're right. I think it's whatever they've seen. And... Mm-hmm. You know, the ones that I remember are Better Off Dead, American Virgin, Bill and Ted's. So I tend to remember you more for those films. Amityville 2, right. I honestly don't remember if I've seen it or not. I know I've seen the first one, which was with James Brolin, I believe, the one in like 74.
Right.
Okay, so this was the next one. Who else was in that?
Burt Young and Ratanya Alda. And if you would have seen it, you would remember me, because it was a very scary, it was much scarier than Amityville Horror, and it was darker, and it was, shall I say, I have a very unusual storyline with my brother, which involved incest, so I think you might remember that,
yeah, okay.
That was the case.
I'm writing it down. That's going to be on my short list to watch.
Yeah, I recently just had someone who interviewed me, and they said, I could not believe that you were the same person in this movie and that. Like, they picked like two different movies. They couldn't believe it. Like, they went, oh my gosh, that's the same girl. And that's the kind of feeling I really like people to have when they watch my work, because they can't just assume that I'm just like, they think I'm one thing, and then they look at another and they go, oh my gosh. So that's when they can really see what I can do as an actress.
Wow. You and Johnny Depp.
Yeah, I love Johnny Depp, yeah.
I mean, he's unrecognizable from one film to the other, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I love that.
Yeah.
I think that makes it more interesting for the audience. And truth is, it is about the story. Like, you need to believe the story. And if you see the actor and you don't see the story, you're missing the love of the piece, you know? For a film, you want to be engrossed in what's happening. You don't want to be like, oh yeah, that's so-and-so in that role. You want to be like, oh my gosh, that move, that person. You want to feel it. You want it to be real. So that's how I feel about performances.
Well, we do have to kind of wind this down. So tell us what you're working on these days. Since we spent all the time in the 80s, let's move up to, to 2020.
Love Bill and Ted's. So I'll tell you something that's fascinating is that I never, ever expected for us to be having this conversation now. I never thought that, first of all, I'd be talking about things that I was doing in the 80s and also going and being in films today. I am actually working so much. It is kind of insane. I have four films that are supposed to come out, and this year, or there's a film that's maybe going to come out before Christmas on I think probably video called High Holiday, and I have a cameo in that. I think in 2021, I've been waiting for this film to come out called Waking Nightmare. I have another film, a zombie film, it's called Clay Zombies. That will be coming out next year. And I have a secret film. I can't talk about it,
okay.
But it is going to be huge, and it is scary, but it's going to be huge. So that's my secret project. So if people can follow me on social media, you know, you will find out when these films come out. You can find out when I'm putting out my Better Off Dead book. And also I have something going on with the other princess from Bill and Ted's. We're working on something together. Again, another project I can't talk about yet until next year when it's announced. I've got a lot of things going on. Plus, I'm going to throw this in. My daughter is a filmmaker, and she is on TikTok with her comedy partner called Sid and Olivia, if you look that up on TikTok. Or you can watch her show. She's a show creator and writes, directs, acts, and also is acting with her comedy partner on Snapchat in Apocalypse Goals. So look up Apocalypse Goals on Snapchat. You'll see my daughter, and yes, she looks like me and talks like me, which is so cute. And she does comedy, so she's strictly comedy. That's her thing. And then lastly, my son, Nick De Laurentiis, is on Spotify, and he is a classical bass player, but he also he writes his own music, and he's 21, bright red curly hair, gorgeous, adorable, and you'll love his music. His music is so beautiful. So that's all I can share. Let's go to Spotify and look Nick De Laurentiis, and I'm done. That's it. That's all I can. And go to Diane on Twitter. I'm Diane Franklin 80, and on Instagram I'm actress Diane Franklin, and on Facebook it's, my Facebook is full. But if you go to Diane Franklin Official or Official Diane Franklin Fans, that one, that is my group page, and I am connected with that as well. So,
okay.
Anyway, that is all. That is what I can say.
Well, super. It's been great having you on. When is your Better Off Dead book going to come out? Do you know yet?
I don't know because, I mean, if it will come out next year, I'd say for sure. I just have been taking my time with it because I want to make sure that I, like, it's so funny. The more I wait, the more things I get and I get to put in. But I'm going to say next year for sure, you know, maybe the beginning of the year, but like, it just depends on my schedule and stuff because I am working too. Like I actually have done, I'm doing, it's strange in the COVID world. I'm doing some films, but they're not, they're all very like they're SAG and they're safe. And so, and it's not a lot, but you know, we have to all be careful. So, you know, Yeah. You wear your mask and everyone just hang in there because it's a very strange time in history.
It is indeed.
So anyway, yes. Well, hopefully, you know, beginning of next year.
Okay. Well, maybe, you know, keep us in mind. I'd love to have you back. So when your book comes out, we could promote it for you here on the show.
Oh, thank you. That is such a sweet thing to say. Thank you. I'd love to.
Okay. Super. My guest is Diane Franklin. Thank you so much for coming on. This was a lot of fun reminiscing about old times and all your great films.
Cheers. Thank you.